Comments are live.
Good morning. It is May 16th, 2017 at 10:34 a.m. I call this informal hearing of the North Dakota Public Service Commission to order. Just a couple background things. It is an informal hearing. If we start getting into facts that are in dispute, we will end the informal hearing and call a regular hearing. We have two cases today. They are 17-123, which is the public convenience and necessity case, and 17-144, which would be the service agreement case. As far as they have not been consolidated, and so it's my anticipation that we will hear them and go in order that 17-123 will be first and 17-144 second.
Is that how we have to do it?
Unless there's a motion to consolidate, but many of the in the opportunity for hearing, a lot of the issues to be considered are quite a bit different, but I guess we could have a motion to consolidate if that were chosen. But the issues to consider in those notices are quite a bit different.
I guess I'm thinking since it's an informal, and informals are usually informal. is there any reason why we can't have a conversation that covers all the issues and not try to limit the discussion to just the issues of this case and then switch and limit them just to this? I mean, we can try to do that, but there might be some overlap. So I guess I wanted to know from the attorneys if there's a problem, if it isn't strictly, you know, all the issues for the first case and then all the issues for the second case.
Commissioner, there is some overlap between the facts of this case, between the two different cases. So if the commission would prefer to actually have this consolidated for hearing, at least from the staff side, there would be no objection to that. Even though some of the issues are separate, most definitely.
So if I'm understanding, if you consolidate it for just the informal hearing, it's not melding the cases together. It's just consolidating for this process right here.
That's correct.
I would...
There's a motion ready.
Okay. Well, let's take care of that then. Would you like me to make the motion, since I feel strongly about this?
If you want to make the motion,
make the motion,
you certainly are.
Believing that there will be no prejudice to the rights of the parties or the public interest, and finding the cases involve similar questions of law and fact, I move the commission consolidate the cases for purpose of hearing in Montana Dakota Utilities Company, Inc., a division of MD Resources Group, Inc., Natural Gas System, Ransom and Sargent Counties, Public Convenience and Necessity Case Number PU-17-123, and Montana Dakota Utilities Company, Inc., a division of MD Resources Group, Inc., Gas Transportation, Clark Equipment Company, Service Agreements, Case Number PU-17-123.
Second.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. Is there any other discussion? All in favor of the motion, vote aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed to the motion, vote nay. The motion passes unanimously.
Okay.
With that, we will begin this consolidated informal hearing. The cases are case number PU-17-123, Montana Dakota Utilities Company, a division of MDU Natural Gas System, Ransom and Sargent Counties, Public Convenience and Necessity, and case number PU-17-144, Montana Dakota Utilities Company, a division of MDU Gas Transportation, Clark Equipment Company, Service Agreement. Again, just now that each case is, that the cases are consolidated, it is 10:39 on May 16th, 2017. I am Randy Christman. With me today is Commissioner Julie Fedorchak, Commissioner Brian Crosius, Jack Hsu from staff, and Victor Shook from staff. We have Ilana Jeffcoat-Sacco from staff is here. Steve Call from staff is here. We also have Don Larson from Odney Advertising, a lobbying firm, Steve Bakken from Larson Engineering, and a number of people from MDU, and I will ask you to go around and state your names. And Bobcat or Clark Equipment, and please add whether you intend to speak. But there will be an opportunity for public comment at the end anyway, but just so we know.
Good morning, Garrett Singer with the regulatory area with Montana, Dakota, and I will be giving a short presentation in just a few minutes.
Good morning, I'm Eric Spilde with Bobcat and Doosan. I'm the North American controller to represent the customer need on this, and I'll share some comments and answer questions as they come up.
Larry Oswald with Montana Dakota Utilities Company. I handle our business development and marketing area, and I'm here for any questions you may have.
Hi, I'm Nathan Sunt, Senior Engineer with Montana Dakota Utilities, and I will be here to answer questions.
Good morning. Carl Liepitz, Assistant General Counsel with MDU Resources, and available for questions.
We also have a few others who have participated in this study and in this venture. Would you like for them to introduce themselves as well?
No, I don't think, but the rest are associated with MDU. Okay. The applicant will proceed first. Oh, yeah, if there's opening comments. Sorry, I skipped through that part. Commissioner Crosius should be first, though. It's his portfolio.
Or last.
Unless you prefer to
doesn't matter to
wrap up the comments.
Ladies first.
Go ahead.
As long as someone goes.
All right. I will go. Well, what we're looking at visiting about, talking about today is a contract agreement between MDU and Clark Equipment Company to move natural gas to the Gwinner facility, to the Bobcat facility. The line is approximately 21 miles. We're talking 12-inch plastic pipe will be used at a cost of $13.8 million. One thing that was a little bit unique that I noticed and as noted is that it's not a typical 50-50 utility capital structure, but rather an 80% debt financing and of $11 million and then 20% equity at $2.8 million. The project will not be included in other North Dakota gas rate base, but will be standalone. Be a standalone regulated project with a 15-year contract life. And currently, the facility in Gwinner, the Bobcat facility, is utilizing propane, and this would shift from propane to natural gas, if I understand that correctly, and we'll, I'm sure, hear more about that. And I think the rest of the points I would make will be discussed, I'm quite sure, as we go through and converse. So I will turn it over with that.
Well, good morning, everybody. It's great to be here today. This is an issue, natural gas service to unserved areas, that's been a focus for myself for a number of years, and it's for precisely the type of case that we're talking about today, industrial purposes, serving our state's largest manufacturer with natural gas. We know natural gas is the preferred energy source for industrial development and industrial projects and processes. And so Bobcat not having natural gas has been a problem for that company for many years. And it doesn't put them in the best competitive position globally or even within their operations in North America. So I applaud all of the players for coming together and trying to find an innovative way. We know that the traditional way and following the way it's been done for many years in terms of typical utility finance and projects is not going to effectively reach all the places in North Dakota that want natural gas. So we have to look at some different options. I appreciate the process we have in front of us because it allows now, you guys have had your innovative approach, allows us to look at that and see and make sure that it complies with all the requirements that are set up in law meet our approval. So I'm looking forward to the discussion today, and the issues are clearly laid out in all the notices, and look forward to what you all have to say and to learning more about this and having my colleagues and I ask questions and really get to the crux of the matter and see if this is something that can be workable and can move ahead. So thank you very much for all the work you put into this to this point, and I look forward to a productive discussion.
And before I start, Garrett, there is one more procedural thing. We don't do a lot of informals, so I'm going through my checklist and making sure we've done all the things we should. And what I missed was the issues to be considered. So in case number PU-17-123, the application for a certificate of public convenience and necessity to construct and operate the gas system to serve portions of Ransom and Sargent counties, the issues to be considered are: one, is there a need for the service? Two, is MDU technically, financially, and managerially fit and able to provide the service? Number three, what is the effect on other public utilities providing similar service? And number four, is the proposed service adequate? In PU-17-144, that is the request for approval of an agreement for natural gas transportation service with Clark Equipment Company. There are six issues to be considered, and those are: number one, what is the value of MDU's property used and useful for the service and convenience of the public in North Dakota? What is MDU's rate of return on its property used and useful for the service and convenience of the public in North Dakota? Number three, what is the just and reasonable rate of return on MDU's property used and useful for the service and convenience of the public in the state? Number four, what rates and charges are necessary to provide a just and reasonable rate of return on MDU's property used and useful for the service and convenience of the public in the state? Number five, are MDU's proposed rate schedules designed in such a manner that they result in a basis of charge to its customers that is just and reasonable without discrimination? And last, number six, other relevant information or proposals concerning the proceeding. With that out of the way, Garrett, you can start.
Thank you, Chairman, and good morning, commissioners and staff. It's a pleasure for MDU to be here today to seek approval of these two cases as were just outlined. There's a short presentation, and then we do have all the experts in the room to answer questions you may have regarding both of these dockets. As was mentioned, on March 31st, MDU did file for approval and to be issued a certificate of public convenience and necessity to construct and operate a natural gas distribution system in portions of Ransom and Sargent counties to provide service to Clark Equipment, who's doing business as Bobcat, at its production facility in Gwinner. It's comprised of 21 miles of 12-inch plastic pipe from a tap from the Alliance Pipeline to Bobcat's facility in Gwinner at a cost of approximately $13.8 million. And thanks to Eric, we do have an aerial view on the slide of the production facility in Gwinner. This is a map of southeastern North Dakota that depicts the Alliance Pipeline and shows where then the tap would occur off that Alliance Pipeline and then down to Gwinner. That's the proposed route of the project. And if you then switch to the next slide, is more of a localized or zoomed in, if you will, map showing the tap, and you'll see there's about four or five stretches of 3 to 5 mile lines along the route, and it follows a county highway 54, as well as the last loop then to Gwinner is State Highway 13. So this is today, as of today, the proposed route of the project.
Do you have a percentage of that that you're proposing that would be in highway rights of way, either county or state, as opposed to private property, or is it?
Today, what we're thinking is that Highway 13 portion, which is probably a quarter of it, probably would be that we'd use from the state highway that would have the right of ways that we could utilize the rest of it. We'd have to go out and do search records, and Nathan, maybe you can expand on that a little bit.
Yeah, there is some county right-of-ways that we may be able to use, but we'd have to do the title search on that. More than likely, the landowner still owns to the center line of the section, mm-hmm. and we'd still have to get the easement anyway. So
it's so about a fourth, then, of the route would be under state highway right-of-ways that we'd want to utilize.
Has there been any conversation with DOT? I thought that they had kind of gotten away from allowing that and all but the most extraordinary circumstances.
Dave had, or I think someone did reach out to the DOT.
We have talked to the state highway department. Hold on a second, Dave. Just in case.
When we did the Wahpeton project, we actually ran on State Highway 13 for that, and we did get permission from the highway department for that. And because of there's a growing number of drain tile in this particular area, it was thought that, you know, it might be best off, and they indicated that they would allow us to run on state highway right away, because it's a low pressure line. It's not a high pressure transmission line. It's a low pressure distribution line.
Okay. One more follow up on the route. It looks so that you are following generally some roads, not taking the cross the field like shortest route diagonally.
That's correct. Nathan, anymore?
Okay.
Yeah, part of that is to avoid the drain tile, like Dave mm-hmm. was saying, and also for maintenance, leak survey and things, it's sure. Having access makes it easier for us.
The items to be considered, and you laid those out very well then, Mr. Chairman, as you mentioned, there is a need to serve the Bobcat facility in Gwinner, and that Montana Dakota is a viable company to provide such load, evidenced by the almost 110,000 customers that we serve today in North Dakota. No other natural gas public utility will be affected then by this construction, and the proposed service is adequate to meet Bobcat's needs. So we ask that a certificate of public convenience and necessity be granted for areas along the pipeline route in Ransom and Sargent counties.
Can you speak at all to other customers that might eventually benefit from this line or potentially exist in that area that might want natural gas service as well, and how this line could fill that in terms of additional capacity or existing capacity?
If we go back to this map, I think shortly off, right off of the Alliance tap up there, I think, is where the Hutterite colony exists today. And I think, Miller, do you want to expand on that a little bit? Larry?
Yes. We will definitely look at all of the customers or potential customers that we can economically feasible to serve off of this line, including, you know, the communities of Milner and Gwinner. And we haven't been in conversations with them yet, but we intend to do so as this project moves forward.
How far is Milner and Gwinner? How far of a connection would that be? Well, Gwinner, you'd be right there, but Milner.
About a mile.
Off the pipeline is right. From where the yep. pipeline goes past Milner, it'll be about a mile.
And is there, this is a plastic pipe, correct? Can you easily tap into plastic? You can do other connections onto it, feeders?
Yes, that's why we went with plastic. Then we don't have to go with the line heater and the pressure reduction equipment at each tap, just tap
okay.
Serve the customer.
And would those, would this gas being straight from Alliance, it's a little, do we say hotter? Or it's got more more liquids in it, more NGLs? What's the term? Yeah, NGLs. So is that something that a community could use? Or would it have to be more of an industrial use? is the gas of the quality that can be used?
Gas quality.
The gas is today, as of today, is quality that can be used. It's a little hotter, but it's still within the zones of where we'd want to be serving the natural gas.
All right. Any sense of what the demand might be in those areas, the additional to use this?
Well, I know what we based our numbers on, or the models on, economics on, was about 185,000 dekatherms a year for Bobcat's load. And then we based the additional load up to 250,000 dekatherms a year. So we're hoping, as part of this project, that we can add about 65,000 additional dekatherms.
That's the 35% overage?
Right.
Okay.
And how long, it may take a bit to, a while to get there, but certainly, full force marketing efforts to do the best we can.
And if you did that, and this might be sneaking a little bit into some of the financing, but if you did that, how do those communities fit into the financing plan?
Those communities would be outside of the financing plan. We'd have to look, for instance, at Mile, from the lines, or from the line to Milner, there'd be a cost, additional cost with that, right? So we'd have to, at that point, determine, how that would be financed and what we'd need to do to, hook up the town or community of Milner, as an example.
But that then Milner would probably be separate, correct?
Yes.
I mean,
right.
I guess I'm wondering, how do you continue to keep it separate from the overall MDU gas system?
Each of these projects, and whether there's additional costs or just contributing or participating in the $13.8 million, all of that will be separate from MDU gas.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And you have it worked out in your arrangement, how that affects. Okay.
As we bring load onto the project, then Bobcat would get credit for that additional load.
Okay.
As each new customer would come onto the system.
Do you envision a day where it ever becomes part of your regular system? Is there a pathway for that?
I think once, after the initial contract term, we could consider it at that point.
But you'd see the initial contract term out.
Right, because of the initial contract term follows the financing through the match program.
Okay. I guess it would be interesting to hear from Eric, from Bobcat's perspective, since you said the need for the line exists to serve Bobcat's facility. But let's hear a little bit officially from Bobcat as to the importance of it.
Sure. Yeah, I can give you a little background, too, to just to make sure we're all aware of kind of Bobcat's presence in North Dakota and kind of the importance for this service. So Bobcat's headquartered in West Fargo, and we have manufacturing facilities in North Dakota in Bismarck, Gwinner, and Wahpeton. Gwinner is the only site that does not get served by what we feel is the lowest cost option and also the highest supply. One of the challenges and risks that we run in our facility, we run pretty much 24 hours a day, and gaps in supply on the existing propane could be detrimental to us as a business overall. So we certainly see this as a supply enhancement for us to ensure that we have continuity through that. But more importantly, we compete globally against some of the household names in construction equipment like John Deere and Caterpillar and some up-and-comers like Kubota that are very, very challenging to compete against. And we know that we have to have the most cost-efficient product that we can. So anytime that we can find a chance to take cost out of the production of our vehicles, it gives us a better chance to both compete in North America as well as export globally. We have about 900 dealers globally within the Bobcat channel in total, and we are a supply source for some of those. So we're having to build in, to be honest, a geographically tough spot in the world, right? We're kind of in the center of the U.S. here, and having to take our product built here and compete out, we need to find every cost advantage that we have. And, this has been a project that we have kind of officially gone after probably for about 5 years in different models. And this is, this structure, this kind of creative approach has been the first time that this has gotten to pencil out to give us a cost advantage to ensure that we can continue to compete. Again, we have about 2,400 employees in North Dakota right now, and we want to continue to grow that and invest, but it takes us being the most cost-effective producer that we can, coupled with great products and great dealers and channel that we work through. So we feel this is, kind of a great step for us to take cost out of our product to ensure supply and continuity. We really hope to get your full support through this process.
What all would natural gas replace? The heating of your facilities?
Yes.
And
yep.
Anything else?
Yeah, so from a process standpoint, the main consumer of natural gas will be our paint curing. Down in Gwinner, we're a very vertically integrated manufacturer. We take raw coil steel, we stamp it, we weld it together in that facility using a lot of automation. Then we have our own shot blast system and a pretty elaborate painting system. Well, that paint curing is the largest consumer of fuel to have to be able to bake either a powder coat or a liquid E-dip coat onto our products and cure that. So about 75% of our load is based on heating and processing. We also have some heat treat that goes on in the components where we have to take a steel component and add heat to it to get it to the right hardness to be able to machine that. But the bulk is the paint processing. Now, we also have a very large footprint, a facility that, you know, in North Dakota, we have to keep warm as well. So about 25% of our load is based on heating. But I think the beauty of this, too, is that we're a nice, consistent kind of demand, right? We aren't going through a lot of peaks. Obviously, there'll be more in December, January, February, but we've got a great base load 12 months of the year as well, which I think is also a good enabler for this. But really, it is a manufacturing process that drives most of this need.
Eric, have you had any conversations with folks in the community there, Gwinner community? Are they aware of this, or are you sort of just kind of?
We have not. We had a kind of an official position or next step. I think we feel it's really critical for approval at this mm-hmm. level. Really, there's two contingencies in the contract. One is approval by the PSC, and the other is to ensure that the contract estimates come in within that range. Once we have that, I think we may be able to have some broader discussions about how we plan for transition. You know, this is about a year out and change from when we go from approval to kind of hooking up our facility, so we do have some time. But to date, we have not gone out because of really these two contingencies and started to. But we know that MDU, and you know, we're really the customer on this. MDU is driving this, and it's going to be their customers and their marketing. We'll certainly support Southeast North Dakota any way that we can, and we'll continue to do that. But we're going to let MDU take the lead on that effort.
And how many employees do you have at your Gwinner facility?
We run about, including salaried and hourly, about 1,600 employees that come to Gwinner every day, which is pretty unique given the fact that it's a town of about 600 or 700 people. So we draw from quite a range in southeast North Dakota. And we really think, you know, we're hopeful to try and get the cost of this infrastructure down is that, you know, we have a lot of suppliers that make plastic components and heat treat components, and we're hoping that, you know, with natural gas infrastructure, they may want to, you know, put some facilities around us. Really, that's the driver here, is to drive some economic development in that region by having this as an option. We don't have any specifics on if that would happen, but we do know that people typically don't look at that option when natural gas isn't present. So
sure.
It's kind of hard for us to speculate about if that will happen, but we're hopeful, again, to just get more kind of demand on this system and to have a supplier that would be closer to us. We'd love for that opportunity to happen if it would.
Is the propane coming from a local or a regional supplier?
We have a local supplier, yes, that handles the bulk of our activity today. There will be some transition. Certainly they'll have to go through. They do have some local storage. But it is quite a volume for us. You know, it's one of the things that if we ever had a disruption in supply, our storage is not very long to keep our facility running. So it's been kind of a risk for some time. But there will be some transition we'll have to plan through 2018 with them.
And one of the issues to be considered is the impact on other utilities. For your electricity, are you a Otter Tail Power customer, or are you outside of town in a cooperative area?
We're an Otter Tail Power customer.
And is there any electric heating or the treating or anything like that that goes on? Does this displace all propane, or is there some electric service that's being
propane,
displaced if this would go through as well?
It is propane targeted. You know, obviously over time, right, we'll always look at if there's a lower cost option for some process. But again, the bulk of our activity is run on paint curing with propane. That's the main target for this. If there were some small things that happen over time, but we wouldn't expect it to materially change Otter Tail Power's base load into our facility.
other questions as it relates to the PCNN?
On the propane dealer, so where is the propane coming from? Is it from a supplier in the state? I guess that was a little unclear to me. Is it?
Yeah, our current source, and we've used multiple over the years, as you'd imagine. It's such a load of quantity that we're certainly out trying to find the best cost annually for that. But currently, it is a supplier that is within Gwinner. So it's the Dakota Plains Co-op, CHS, is the current source of that.
All right.
Oh, Alana has.
Hi, it's Alana. Since you invited questions on the PCNN, what are you envisioning as the boundary of the authority of the of your, you know, gas distribution PCNN authority, if any? Or I know you're not bumping up against a neighbor, but when would you need to come in for a different PCNN in that area?
I would think, I mean, is there like a mileage boundary? I don't think that there's anything like that, but certainly if there was another community miles away, I think at that point, say that for some reason there's ability to head towards Wahpeton or something like that, right? Or in a direction that's not part of that route. I think we'd have to probably come back then for the PCNN. So,
I was wondering if maybe you could follow this with something in writing that sort of defined what you think you're asking for or what you're willing to limit it to. Like I said, I know there's not a neighbor necessarily bumping up to compete with you, but I can also see issues developing if we don't try to say something specific.
I mean, the request was for Ransom and Sargent counties, right? So I think if it was beyond that.
Well, it said areas in, right. I was looking this morning for something more specific, and it said areas, and maybe it's a distance from the line.
We'll define that, Alana, and then get back.
You're looking for a service area definition.
Well, yeah, the PCNN area.
Do we always provide a physical definition for a PCNN?
Well, usually it's a community, and we don't really have boundaries, but we do have issues where you have to extend farther out and how's the cost handled and things like that. Mm-hmm. And so, no, we don't have it like we do clearly like in electric. But given that this is kind of as vague as it is and that there is an interest in adding customers, I think there should be some description of what would be authorized by that PCNN.
What could impact it would be the amount of interest from others that aren't identified today, right? And that mm-hmm. could maybe change that as well if you look at. So we'll meet internally and try to come up with some scope, if you will.
I would appreciate that. Thanks.
Well, and that gets to my next question, but what obligation does the CPCN put on the company? It allows you to serve these areas, but you can't be discriminatory.
Right.
If someone, a similar customer, is willing to pay the same rate and it's in one of these two counties, then it's a little questionable as to whether that amount of pipeline works out for the company. How is that determined then? Does this place you under an obligation? Or I'm not sure. We've never done anything quite like this.
Right. This is new, and I think that, you know, we based and this project on some of the interests I think that we think may be out there, right? What are the additional potential clients, knowing, you know, going through that area, studying that area a little bit, and then coming up with a route. And certainly if there was a community, and I don't know what those communities would be, 30 to 40 to 50 miles away, I mean, there would be a substantial cost associated trying to make that connection, right? But it's something we'd have to look at.
Well, and don't you have an extension policy that would apply here or could apply here so that if another community wants to connect, they have to pay for it?
Correct. Yes.
Extension,
yes,
line.
Would.
It wouldn't be your obligation because there's a PCNN.
Whatever it would take to connect, you know, to this particular line to provide that service, then, you know,
right,
whether it's a community or another company, they would have to pay the additional costs if you're paying additional, if mm-hmm. you're building an additional line.
Are there any downsides that you see to defining a territory, a service area? Do you have concerns about that, Garrett?
I don't know. I don't think there's really. Tammy, do you see any concerns with that? I mean, defining. No, I think that's fine. Yeah. It is, yeah. It'd just be if there was, after the announcement of such a line, if there would be others who might be interested in locating, you know, at some location closer to the line or something like that. And if it was not in the scope, then we'd have to come in at that time probably then to request it.
Yeah. Well, hopefully you'll define it broadly enough.
Right. That is the plan, is for marketing efforts to really, dig it up and raise a lot of interest in this project and potential users of natural gas.
Okay, so I want to ask you a question as a CPCN holder with other certificates. I'm trying to distinguish whether there's a difference here between the propane provider, who's not a regulated utility, and what we would do if that were something regulated. So in towns, communities where you provide electric service and there's no gas service, so presumably you have some big electric customers that heat with electricity. If someone sought a CPCN to go serve natural gas to those communities and take your big electric loads away from you, would MDU object to granting that CPCN in those areas, or I'm trying to distinguish here.
Well, if they were already in our service areas, I think we would have explored being able to provide that natural gas in those areas, right? So, you know, from that perspective.
Maybe someone else looks at it and decides that they can when you thought it wasn't going to work out. But
I think, you know, with some, would we object to it? We'd certainly try to remain competitive, if you will, you know, from, you know, what our electric rates would be, but.
But you wouldn't object to them being able to come in and compete with a CPCN of their own for gas?
I mean, I think it depends on the community, right, and the circumstances and what we feel would be our cost to extend natural gas to that area. Certainly we'd want, you know, to have that opportunity as well, right? And could they do it, you know, at a cost that would be less than what MDU could? I mean.
Well, the CPCN doesn't exclude the propane dealers from providing propane service.
No.
It's not like you get to take over all of their.
Correct.
It's just more competition.
Yes.
But I'm just trying to figure out what our precedent here is, though, because in the kind of example I'm laying out, where it could be someone else coming in and instead of competing against the propane dealer, just wanting to compete against the electric provider, there too, it's just competition. But I'm wondering if our current certificate holders would scream about another type of competitor entering the same markets.
I think that, you know, in regards to natural gas, especially in that area, you have communities who in eastern part of the state, and especially, you know, whether it's Wahpeton and wanting the capacity. So I think there's a big push, if you will, across the state for natural gas. And again, if we're serving electric in some community and we have the ability and it would be cost effective, I think MDU certainly would explore that and has explored that in the past to provide, whether it's, you know, parts of central North Dakota, you know, where we have electric. I think it would be on a case-by-case basis whether or not we would maybe, you know, intervene, if you will.
It just seems to me that this, I don't know, it seems precedent-setting to me that if we do this, that in those kinds of cases, I don't know how we would do this and not do that in other cases. So,
I'm not really following your concern, Randy, because we have natural gas and electric in all kinds of communities, working competitively all the time. You know, in Fargo, Grand Forks, every community that has natural gas has electric too. So I guess I don't see how this is precedent setting in any way. It's just getting natural gas to a community that doesn't have it. And you know, the financing and the way to make it happen is different, because it's not just a natural extension of an existing facility. It's separate, but I don't see how this is different than what already exists in a lot of North Dakota communities already.
And the fact that it coexists, maybe there is precedent, but it's pretty old. I don't know of any in quite a long time that have added natural gas by, you know, an outside someone different than what the electric provider is. But I just am pointing out, because in this case we have an electric provider at the table, if someone else than them decided that they wanted to come in and provide gas in some of the towns that are provided, you know, obviously every one of these is an individual case, but it would seem to me this sort of sets the stage that would not be a good argument that while we need that electric base to continue to serve the rest of that community.
Right. I mean, what's not served today are small communities, right, with populations probably under that 2,000, 2,500 threshold. And I think some of the new, you know, discussion at this year's new legislation, if you will, address some of that as well in terms of expanding services to communities under a certain population. So what's left really are your small communities. So I don't think that you'd really run into a situation where you would be providing natural gas in an area where it was electric. I mean, certainly MDU has in the past and continues really to, you know, look at areas in the state that aren't served today and cost effectively, what will it cost to provide, whether it's 30 miles, 10 miles, what does that cost to bring gas to those communities? Okay. So we're continuously looking at that in the areas not served today. So, Alon, going back to your question, you'd like a little more definition of that area. All right, moving on then to requesting approval for the transportation agreement. Again, we filed that as well at the end of March, and the agreement was executed on March 5th earlier this year, and it is a 15-year term with an expected in-service date starting in August of 2018.
And Garrett, sorry to interrupt, but this is now the 17-144.
Correct. Yeah, we're moving on.
I know they're consolidated, but now you're discussing.
Now we're discussing PU 17144, and that's requesting approval of the gas transportation agreement. Okay. That's correct. Yep. And it's a 15-year contract term. And as was mentioned previously, either party has the right to terminate the agreement no later than August 31st if costs exceed $13.8 million or that MDU does not receive the PCNN or the approval of this contract under terms acceptable to MDU. So again, the expiration then of that termination period is August 31st of 2017. This next slide depicts the various components, if you will, of the rates and to be charged to Bobcat in this agreement. And it's comprised of three components. The first two kind of follow what the North Dakota rate 82 is for MDU today in that tariff. It's comprised of a monthly basic service charge of $1,000 a month or $12,000 annually, a distribution delivery charge based on the usage of about just under 30 cents per decatherm, and that's about $55,000 annually. And then the remaining components to come up with the economics of the model, it will be recovered through a monthly contract demand charge of about $80,000 a month or $956,000 annually for a total revenue, if you will, of $1,023,000. And again, the monthly contract demand charge will be adjusted for final project costs as well as a final interest rate once that interest rate is locked in.
And there's also adjustment for other customers coming online. So in the example, let's say Milner signs up and you had 20, 30, 50 customers there. The Bobcat's monthly bill would be adjusted based on the
correct
contribution from those other customers.
Exactly. After you bring additional customer on, that contract demand charge would decrease.
And how is do you envision that to be calculated? I mean, just based off of the total demand from the new customer versus Bobcat's demand?
Right.
Or
it would be an association of that based on the total costs participating. Their participation of the of their expected usage over that total cost.
So is that like a formula somewhere in the contract where it kind of lays that out, or is, I mean, how do we know how that will be?
Larry, maybe just want to expand on that a little bit.
Yeah, we, you know, the contract provides the language to proportionally adjust theirs based upon the new load coming in. So we, you know, as Garrett indicated, we would take a look at those new customers and the volume that they create and adjust that contract demand for Bobcat and by what the additional customers would be paying. So there's not.
And Bobcat knows what those terms are and agreed to them.
Correct.
So that was all spelled out.
That was all spelled on the right okay. In discussions and I'm getting the contract okay. Negotiations. Yeah.
So where my kind of confusion lies. So, you know, Bobcat's load is 185,000 decatherms annually. The pie pass capacity for 250,000 decatherms annually. Right now, these contracts amounts are based on Bobcat being the only customer on that line. Okay. So if I add somebody else, let's say for 20,000 decatherms. There's still plenty for both of those on there. I guess it seems odd way to calculate this. You know, basically, Bobcat's paying for the whole thing. There's right. Capacity for others on there.
Yes.
It seems weird to. I don't know. I guess it's, well, the calculation method just
say that you add a 20,000 decatherms annually on, right? So now you have a new total. You would have 205,000 decatherms. So you'd base whatever that investment, the net investment was at that time, over that $205,000 spread to come up with contract demand charges.
So would the limit of new customers you could add be limited to? So if the total capacity is 250, you can only add 265?
So 250 was really a target, if you will, for us.
So the capacity of
yes.
The pipe would be actually greater than
yes,
that.
Yes, correct. Yeah.
Okay.
It was based on economics and what Bobcat would be comfortable with as well in terms of a range, if you will, from an economic viewpoint of where we'd like to target. Yeah. Other questions on the rate structure?
So I wouldn't imagine you're going to get too many new customers at $1,000 a month for the base service charge. So how are would other customers' rates be set? Are they somehow affiliated with similar customers on other MDU gas systems? Or do you have to come in for a new rate when you get additional customers? Or what happens with those folks?
I mean, I think, you know, certainly if it's a new tariff, we'd probably come in to request approval of that tariff as well. Tammy, is there anything to add on that?
Garrett, I believe that we would, you know, ask for a tariff to handle the contract demand charge that would be applied to the other customers. The one thing about the tariff that's in the contract with Bobcat is the basic service charge and the distribution delivery are set is the same as our transportation rate 81 agreement currently in the state of North Dakota, and I would envision that the additional customers would pay their basic service charge and distribution delivery charge, you know, based upon that class of customers, and as well as the additional contract demand charge or a portion of that contract demand charge going forward in that area.
So as each new customer is brought onto the system, we'd have to do a separate revenue requirement for that customer, right? What does MDU need in regards to annual revenue, if you will, to be part of the system? And then once we determine that annual revenue requirement, as you mentioned, Larry, you'd have the different components of that rate, if you will, just like what Bobcat has today, something similar to that.
I'm looking at staff now, but so is that something then that just gets filed with the commission, or would we have to approve those separately depending on what that customer was and their individual facts?
Commissioner, are you talking about a new tariff rate or within the current tariff rates?
Whatever tariff is going to be applied to any new prospective customers, that whether it's Milner or the colony that's there or grain dryer along the way, I don't know what they all could be.
Well, if it's outside of our already approved tariff rates, then they would have to come back in. They are authorized to provide service to that class of service underneath those tariffs, Commissioner.
But on this line?
On this line as well, it should be, yeah.
Okay.
It should be the same customers, unless there's a contract demand charges, as they're doing here. On the same class of service line.
This is one of the reasons why I wanted to find a PCNN, too, because we do want to know who's going to be paying what. But nobody from this line, as I understand it, residential or commercial or industrial, is part of the normal gas rate base and rate payers today.
Yes.
Okay. We got one customer paying off the transportation tariff plus some other things. And if you get another customer, you're going to figure out at that point what they pay. But you're not going to flip to the normal tariff because it doesn't apply to anybody on this line at this moment in time, correct?
Or request a tariff to be amended or adjusted.
You'll figure out and then you'll file something.
Yes.
Is that correct?
Correct.
Okay. Oversimplified, but that's how I understand
it. Right. So any customer outside that is not similarly situated, they will have to file another separate one, which is the case you're talking about right here then.
Yes, okay. But it won't be what's existing today.
Right.
And is that filing so that we know or filing requesting approval? Would that need to be approved by us?
The tariff would need to be approved, yes.
Yep. But, Larry, you were saying to get to the current charges here on the basic service charge and the delivery charge, you used the basic formula that exists for similar customers under your other gas system. Right?
Correct.
Okay, good. And you'd probably use the same type of formula for any other ones on this system.
I would expect that we would as well, that we'd use that same formula for the basic service charge and distribution delivery and that contract demand or, like a surcharge, as you will, to make the project feasible would be the piece that would be specific to this project area as it is specific to Bobcat.
Correct. Okay. That's helpful.
Quick question. The contract demand charge in this one, this is through rate 82 by reference to 124, right?
The contract demand is completely separate from rate 82 today, so that's the new component. So by approval of the transportation agreement, that essentially approves the rate that would be applicable to Bobcat.
Right, but that contract demand that you guys are, or the authority to do that contract demand charge is through rate 124.
Rate 120 is the extension agreement, is that?
See, that's where I was getting a little bit confused when I was reading.
That we're asking for approval of this transportation agreement. So if nobody else came on, that would be approval. The order authorizing this agreement would give us the authority to charge that contract demand charge.
So you are asking for a tariff rate change then?
No, we're asking for approval of this transportation agreement that is applicable to Bobcat. And once you approve that, that would be the rate we would be authorized to charge Bobcat, similar to other agreements we have out there. And then maybe just to walk back and just add on to what Larry's already said, our thought was we'll use, if it's a residential or more likely a grain dryer, that could be residential or commercial. In any event, we would look at our standard tariff first to determine the amount of revenue provided by that customer under that. Then they'd need to pay a portion of the contract demand applicable to Bobcat. So our thought is to come in with a tariff that would spell out this contract demand charge so that other customers understood it as well as we're marketing it. So that would be once this is approved, I would envision us coming back in for a tariff that would spell out how the contract demand charge would be applied. The extension agreement would cover, the rate 120 extension would cover that incremental pipe that's going to these customers. So they may have another contribution requirement above and beyond the monthly contract demand, because that is simply covering the pipeline that goes from Alliance to Bobcat. So it adds potentially an additional charge type to anyone served under that pipeline for the contract demand for the main trunk line, if you will.
Sure.
So we're just looking at that a little bit different than exactly under our rate 120 agreement. So that's why, again, we're asking for approval of this 15-year, you know, which would go beyond our extension agreement.
Okay, that makes sense. Thank you.
Okay.
As was previously discussed, financing will be based on 80% debt and a 20% equity capital structure. Again, $11 million related to debt and slightly under $3 million then related to the company's equity investment. And the debt financing then for this project will be obtained through the Bank of North Dakota's match program. And, you know, when you read the requirements of the match program, Bobcat is a perfect example, really, of what fits that program.
Matches?
Yeah. Right. I mean, it states, and I can...
you don't need to. Yeah.
Retain existing primary sector jobs is one of the highlights, and if you will, of that match program. And so that clearly is clearly what we want to do with this project, right? The current costs are estimated based on an interest rate of 2.3%. That's what's built into the rates, and that will be adjusted once we actually draw on the debt, and once we have the final cost of the debt, then that contract demand rate will be adjusted accordingly. Just yesterday, that rate would be comparable to 2.21%, so it hasn't fluctuated materially in the last couple of months. So if we closed yesterday and it was approved, then it would be a 2.21% interest rate.
That would be the final number after the
correct. So what the rate is comprised of is that it's a 5-year U.S. Treasury rate.
Right.
Then on top of that, the Bank of North Dakota adds 25 basis points.
Right.
And then we'll have a 10 basis point fee because there's an outside bank that will have to provide the security then for this investment as well. And the company is utilizing U.S. Bank as that outside security. And the rate will be reset every 5 years. And again, with the 25 basis points for the Bank of North Dakota and a 10 basis point agent fee. The overall cost of capital for the 20% equity portion, then, if you will, of the rate is at today's gas return on equity authorized of 9.5% is what we have built then into the economics of the project.
If that would change in a future rate case, would that have an impact on the calculation for this contract?
There's nothing in the contract that spells out that ROE would
change. It would be set at 9.5 for the equity portion?
Correct.
Okay.
Yep. We request that approval of the transportation service agreement. Questions as it relates to the financing, if you will, that is outside of the norm of the 50 equity and 50% debt. That again, this project is separate and will be totally separated from the rest of Montana Dakota's rate base and financing. It'll be a standalone little project, if you will.
So when we would see in a rate case, when we calculate out their long short-term debt,
right,
equity, the totals from this would be removed.
Correct.
From those totals.
Yes,
even.
We'd have to exclude the totals from this project.
Okay.
Both the equity piece as well as the debt piece.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay. Anything else?
Other questions that we have on, again, the company, you know, is excited about this project. As Eric has mentioned, both parties have tried over the last 5 to 10 years. Dave, I know you've worked many years on this as well, and I think we're at a point where the economics do pan out, and we're excited to move forward.
Oh, one real quick one going back to, has the propane supplier been notified that this is a likely scenario, or they're unaware outside of any public notice that we've issued for the case being?
Yeah, the propane supplier is aware that this project, this potential project, is out there. So we've had some very preliminary understanding that, yes, there's a change hopefully coming, but that's about the limit of to where we're at. So, and we do have, you know, again, on the interest rate side, we do have urgency in this project to be able to lock this in because it is floating, and we know what the Fed has done recently. So, again, we've got a lot of urgency to ensure that the economics don't move from the 2.3%, and every one of these hurdles are so important to kind of lock this in and get it done sooner than later. So,
thank you.
I don't have any additional questions, but just maybe some final thoughts. From my perspective,
if you could hold final thoughts, we don't have any interveners in the case, but is there anyone from the public that is here to comment?
Okay, sorry. Nope, that's
just
fine.
Talking, just in case it might be better before you.
Yes, for sure. Well, so thanks everyone for the time this morning to work through all the nitty gritty details. Whenever you do something for the first time, there's always some additional thought that needs to go into give and take and questions, and really to get to the bottom of how to ensure that all of our responsibilities for overseeing and regulating MDU are taken care of within the parameters of doing something new and different. So it has huge potential for this area. It's a very significant project. Multiple governors have attempted to help with this, and so I don't think we can really overestimate what a big deal this is to that part of the state. And to Bobcat, one of our state's largest manufacturers, so I appreciate the creativity and the effort that has been exerted to get to this point, and we'll continue to work through the channels here to ensure that all of the I's are dotted and T's are crossed from our end as well, and get you guys a decision as absolutely quickly as possible.
Well, I'd also like to echo thank you to everyone for your time this morning. And it goes without saying, Bobcat and MDU are very important to the state's economy, and this appears to be just a great working partnership between the two. And we know that, as Eric mentioned earlier, sometimes we can be a little bit geographically challenged in terms of moving product to market, and that in effect means we have to constantly look, or the state has to constantly look, industry within the state, for new efficiencies and lowering that cost structure that's in place. And one part that also, as mentioned as we were talking, when I look at the agricultural sector overall and the opportunity, the potential opportunity for others to tap into the supply of natural gas coming off the Alliance Pipeline, it's a tight ag market right now. And when you're talking about grain drying in particular, you're talking break-even points that are not advantageous given the current commodity pricing structure that's in place. So whenever you can lower the per-acre cost, if you will, on the ag side, and that's not something that's immediate, but it certainly looks like the potential will be there for that, that's incredibly important. So, again, thank you for everyone's time, and I will turn it over to you.
I will say that it's just phenomenal that in North Dakota there's things happening that people are working to advance business instead of figuring out how to close things up and board them up and walk away. So that's exciting. On the flip side, there's some areas where the policymakers over the course of decades have determined need some regulatory overview, and so not everything is a wide open business free-for-all. And this is one of them that requires this regulatory oversight, and so we will do that. Are there any objections to the evidence produced today, including the recording becoming a part of the official record? I See none. So the evidence will become part of the record on which decisions are made separately in cases number PU-17-123 and PU-17-144. Are there any other matters anyone wants put on the record?
So the company will file something pursuant to the service area, I would assume, with a proposed order?
Correct. We'll define, you know, in our what we think should be the boundaries, if you will, then of that proposed route and how far out we want to go with that route. Yep.
Just FYI, our next meeting is May 31st, commission meeting, and our summer meeting schedule is a little bit less consistent, so you might want to just keep an eye on those meeting dates and make sure you're, you know, you mentioned wanting to get this done in a timely manner. So,
and within the next, within a week or less, we'll have that filed.
Very good.
Okay. Anything else for the record? If not, this informal hearing, these informal hearings, if it's one or two, I don't know anymore, are closed.